Imagine for a second that you are building the perfect vessel to cross this vast, unpredictable ocean.
Right, like the ultimate unsinkable boat.
Exactly. I mean, you've done everything right. You sourced the absolute best timber for the hull. You've balanced the deck to withstand the roughest waters. And, you know, you have this flawless compass to guide you.
Seems pretty solid so far.
Right. So you set sail. The wind catches. But, and here's the catch, halfway across, you realize something terrifying. You are sinking.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And you can't figure out why until you look down into the cargo hold and you realize it's just secretly filled to the brim with heavy hidden rocks.
That is, it's the kind of realization that just stops you cold, you know?
Totally.
Because you can have the most beautifully constructed vessel in the world, but if that ballast is too heavy, well, the craftsmanship doesn't even matter. The crossing is doomed.
And that gets right to the heart of what we are unpacking today. Welcome to this deep dive, everybody. Our mission today is really about identifying those hidden rocks, understanding how they even got into our cargo hold, and more importantly, figuring out how to drop them overboard so you can actually make the crossing.
Yeah, which is not an easy task.
Definitely not. We're drawing today's insights from a really fascinating framework known as the RAFT program. And just to set the stage for you, RAFT is an acronym. It stands for Recognize, Abandon, Feel, Train.
And for our discussion today, we're really zooming in on Chapter 65, which it sits right near the end in that final train stage of the journey.
Right, the training phase. But to really grasp what Chapter 65 is doing, we kind of need to understand that boat metaphor we just talked about.
Yes, absolutely. So the metaphor of the raft actually comes directly from the teachings of Gautama, the Buddha.
Okay, lay that out for us.
Well, in his framework, you build this raft using three great trainings. First, you have ethics that basically forms the sound timber. You know, the clear, harmless principles that keep the water out.
Makes sense. Got to have a good haul.
Exactly. Then there's collectedness. And honestly, a lot of people gloss over this part, but it essentially acts as your balanced deck and your oars.
Like the stability of the boat.
Yeah, exactly. Collectedness is the practical daily application of emotional regulation and mindfulness. It's your capacity to stay grounded and focused when a huge wave of distress hits, or, you know, when a sudden urge hits, rather than just getting thrown overboard by it.
Right, which keeps you from falling back into those old unskillful habits.
Precisely. And finally, you have wisdom. That acts as your compass, really helping you read the currents and understand cause and effect.
So you have the timber, you have the stability from collectedness, and you have the compass. I mean, you should be good to go, right?
You'd really think so. But even with ethics, collectedness, and wisdom perfectly in place, the raft just cannot make its final crossing if it's weighed down by the heavy ballast of the past.
The hidden rocks in the cargo hold.
Exactly. And in the RAFT program, that heavy ballast is defined specifically as resentment, guilt, and the haunting memory of old wounds.
Okay, let's unpack this, because what we were really talking about here is forgiveness. And man, forgiveness is a loaded word.
Oh, heavily loaded.
Honestly, it's often weaponized.
Yeah.
People hear the word forgiveness and they immediately think it means being weak or, you know, letting someone off the hook or forcing themselves to make nice with someone who really hurt them.
Yeah, that's the standard reaction.
And I have to push back on that idea early on. Because if someone deeply betrayed me, my anger kind of feels like my armor, you know?
Right. It feels protective.
Exactly. If I forgive them and just drop that anger, don't I drop my shield? Aren't I just making myself vulnerable to being hurt by them all over again?
I hear that all the time. That is the most common fear around forgiveness, and it really stems from this massive societal confusion. We tend to conflate forgiveness with reconciliation.
Wait, they aren't the same thing.
Not at all. They are fundamentally different mechanisms. Reconciliation is external and relational. It's a two-person job.
Okay.
It requires trust, it requires the other person to take real accountability, and it requires them to genuinely change their behavior. You cannot reconcile with someone who is still actively harming you.
Which means a lot of the time, reconciliation just isn't on the table at all.
Often it isn't, and it shouldn't be. Forgiveness, on the other hand, is a one-player game. Right. It's purely internal.
A one-player game, I like that.
Yeah, it's the conscious decision not to let hostility and resentment organize your own nervous system. And to address your point about anger being a shield, forgiveness actually allows you to build much stronger, much healthier boundaries.
Wait, so what does this all mean for our boundaries? Are we saying I can forgive someone who harmed me, but still say a hard no to ever seeing them again?
100%.
But how does dropping my emotional armor actually build a stronger boundary?
Because when you rely on anger for protection, your reactions are entirely driven by the initial injury. You are basically steering your life based on their actions. You're highly reactive.
Ah, so they are still holding the compass.
Exactly. But when you release the need to retaliate, you clear your vision.
Yeah.
You're no longer reacting out of a turbulent, painful emotional state.
Right.
So you can look at a harmful person and say a hard, permanent no to them, not because you're consumed by rage, but out of absolute clarity. You steer with discernment rather than pain.
That is huge. That completely separates my internal peace from their external behavior. And, you know, the text talks about this leading to a transition from harmlessness to fearlessness.
Yes. So early in the RAF program, there's this commitment to harmlessness, meaning you commit to not harming living beings, including yourself.
Right. Building that sound timber.
Exactly. Forgiveness is the mature, evolved expression of that harmlessness. When you put down your weapons of retaliation, a profound shift happens inwardly. You become safe inside your own mind.
Wow. Safe inside your own mind.
Yeah, because when you let go of resentment, your nervous system softens. You stop bracing against your own memories, preparing for a battle that ended years ago. And that is true fearlessness. It's not bravado. It's the steadiness of having nothing left to defend.
Having nothing left to defend. I love that. But it's one thing to realize we don't have to reconcile with others to forgive them. It's quite another thing when the person we are holding hostage is ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. That is often the heaviest cargo of all.
Yeah, because the text points out that for many of us, the deepest resentment is actually directed inward. Like we constantly replay mistakes. We rehearse old conversations where we engaged in unskillful habits or hurt the people around us.
We can be incredibly cruel to ourselves.
We really can. And the RAF program notes how quickly that quiet sentence like, I should have known better, turns into an entire identity. We turn our shame into a story about who we fundamentally are.
Which is just a devastatingly heavy rock to carry in that cargo hold.
It really is. It makes me think of being on an incredible cross-country road trip and getting a flat tire.
Okay, yeah.
Getting a flat tire is a mistake, right? It's an event. It's a frustrating delay. But instead of just fixing it, you know, learning to avoid those specific potholes and getting back on the road, you just sit in the dirt.
You just sit there.
Yeah. You sit there, you stare at the broken wheel, and you decide to define yourself permanently as a person who ruins road trips forever. You literally make the flat tire your entire personality.
That is such a great way to visualize it. And the text provides a crucial framework for understanding why we do that by distinguishing between guilt and remorse.
Oh, right. Because they aren't the same thing.
Not at all. They might feel identical in the body at first. You know, that tightness in the chest or that sinking feeling in the stomach, but they move your life in completely opposite directions.
Right, because guilt is static. Guilt says, I was bad, I am bad, I will always be bad.
Yes, exactly. Guilt is that flat tire identity. It turns an action into a permanent verdict. It's a weight that sinks the raft and keeps you endlessly circling the same waters. It just paralyzes you.
Yeah, you can't move forward.
But remorse, however, is dynamic. Remorse says, I caused harm, I see the impact clearly, and I resolve not to repeat it. It's honest, but it's not self-destructive.
So remorse actually mobilizes us. It moves us toward repair.
What's fascinating here is how self-forgiveness acts as an emotional alchemy. It transforms toxic, paralyzing guilt into functional, mobilizing remorse.
I really like that phrasing. Emotional alchemy.
Yeah, it allows you to take full responsibility for your past unskillful habits without crushing your own spirit in the process. You are responsible for your actions, but you are not permanently identical to your worst moment.
That's such a relief to hear, honestly. But it also brings up the practical side. How do we actually do this?
Right, the actual training.
Yeah, because understanding it intellectually is great, but waking up on a Tuesday morning and actually feeling it is another battle entirely. But the RAF program gives us three distinct directions of practice for laying these ghosts to rest.
It does. And it suggests a very gradual approach, starting with what's most accessible. So the first direction is asking for forgiveness.
Okay, so looking outward first.
Sort of. This is about cleaning our own side of the street. It's acknowledging that driven by our own distress, craving, or confusion, we have caused harm. The practice involves visualizing those we've hurt and internally asking for their forgiveness, stating, you have nothing to fear from me.
And what I found so important is that the text explicitly states this is not about tracking them down and demanding they forgive you.
No, absolutely not.
It's entirely about clearing your own conscience internally.
Yes, you're taking responsibility where it's yours and committing to harmlessness going forward. Now, the second direction turns that compassion inward, offering forgiveness to ourselves.
Which is usually harder.
Much harder. This requires us to look back at our past actions and recognize them for what they usually were, which are clumsy, misguided attempts to cope with pain, distress, or fear that we simply didn't know how to handle at the time.
We forgive ourselves for not having the tools we have now. You know, there's a sentiment in the text from a teacher named Jeff Oliver that really captures this.
Oh, I love that quote.
Yeah, he says something to the effect of, "That was who I was then. It is not who I am now. It is not who I will be in the future."
Exactly. You meet your past with curiosity and care rather than a permanent verdict. Which brings us to the third and undoubtedly the most difficult direction, offering forgiveness to others.
The hardest current to navigate.
By far. This is where we visualize those who have harmed us, usually driven by their own ignorance or pain, and we quietly offer them forgiveness. We say, "You have nothing to fear from me." But here is where the text offers profound grace. It introduces what we might call the "as best I am able" clause.
Oh, so relieved to read this. The idea that forgiveness isn't a light switch you just flip on. It's a thawing process.
Right. You cannot force the heart to forgive a deep wound before it's ready.
Right.
And you certainly shouldn't shame yourself for that hesitation.
Right. That just adds more heavy rocks to the boat.
Exactly. Sometimes the first step is simply forgiving yourself for not being ready to forgive them yet. Saying, "as best I'm able right now," might mean a very, very small shift. But the direction you are facing matters far more than your speed.
And the text introduces a concept that's such a subtle but powerful shift in language. They call it forgiving. Not forgiveness, but forgiving.
Yes, breaking the word apart.
Literally giving up the demand that the past should have been different.
It requires a radical acceptance of reality.
You just stop negotiating with history.
Yeah.
You know, you stop sitting there saying, "they shouldn't have done that," or "my childhood shouldn't have been like this."
Which is exhausting.
Completely exhausting. You just allow what happened to belong to the past without continuing to drag it into the present to relive the trial every single day.
It's a profound shift in perspective. Now, for some of our listeners, this idea of thawing or forgiving might sound a bit intangible, like poetry almost.
Yeah, a bit woo-woo for some.
Exactly. So let's look at the hard science and ancient philosophy that the RAFT program uses to ground these concepts. Let's start with the neuroscience of memory.
Let's do it.
We used to think of memory like a video file stored in a digital folder on your computer. You know, you click it, you watch it, and it never changes. But neuroscience shows us memory is highly malleable through a process called reconsolidation.
Okay, let's break that down. How does reconsolidation actually work?
Think of a memory less like a video file and more like a text document.
A text document.
Yeah. Every time you recall a memory, you are basically opening that document. It becomes briefly unstable and editable before your brain saves it again.
Wait, editable?
Yes. If you recall a painful memory while you're in a state of stress, like your heart is racing, you're feeling threatened. Your brain effectively types new, highly emotional data into that document and hits save. It strengthens the emotional charge. But if you bring that same painful memory into awareness while your body is regulated, you're breathing steadily, you're feeling anchored and safe in the present moment, you are editing the document with calmer language.
So your brain literally rewrites the emotional weight of the memory.
Yes, you update the file. Over time, your nervous system learns that the event is no longer happening. You aren't erasing history. You are fundamentally changing your nervous system's relationship to it. You're teaching your body that the danger is in the past and the crossing is happening now.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
And it ties perfectly into the psychology side, specifically the adverse childhood experiences studies, often called the ACEs study.
A really landmark piece of research.
Right. For those who aren't familiar, in the late 90s, researchers at the CDC and Kaiser Permanente looked at thousands of adults. They mapped their current health and unskillful coping mechanisms against traumas they experienced before age 18. Things like neglect or household dysfunction.
And what they found completely revolutionized trauma psychology. They discovered that a lot of the harmful behaviors we exhibit, the ones we judge ourselves so harshly for, actually began as brilliant survival strategies.
Right.
If you grew up in a house with severe unpredictability, your developing nervous system learned to be hypervigilant or maybe to numb out just to survive the environment.
So what looks like a character flaw today was actually a lifesaver 20 years ago.
Exactly.
Right.
What once protected you hardened into a reactive habit long after the threat was gone. And when you view harmful behavior through that lens, whether it's your own clinging in distress or someone else's, it reframes the entire picture.
Yeah, it changes everything.
It's less a sign of a fundamentally broken character and more a sign of a nervous system that learned very quickly how to survive.
It doesn't excuse the harm, obviously, but it completely explains the why.
It does. And, you know, this isn't just modern psychology. The RAFT program points out that Socrates and the Stoics actually argued this centuries ago.
Really? The Stoics?
Yeah. They proposed that people do not willingly choose to do what they truly understand to be harmful.
Wait, I have to stop you there. Even people who do terrible, malicious things, how can the Stoics argue they don't know it's harmful?
Well, it comes down to understanding what the Stoics meant by ignorance. It's not about lacking intelligence. It's about having a corrupted map of reality.
A corrupted map.
Let's say someone acts with extreme cruelty. According to the Stoics, they are doing so because their internal map tells them that cruelty or dominance is the only way to ensure their own safety or worth. They genuinely, mistakenly believe that their harmful action will bring them a good result.
Wow.
If you see their actions as rooted in a damaged map of the world rather than pure, unadulterated evil, it allows you to fiercely condemn the action while still recognizing the tragic confusion that produced it. You realize they were steering with a broken compass.
So you don't let them steer your vessel, but you don't have to carry resentment toward them as ballast either. That is so powerful, and that perfectly echoes what Gotama taught thousands of years ago in a teaching called the Simile of the Saw.
Yes, it's one of his most radical pieces of instruction.
Right. Gotama essentially tells his followers that even under the most extreme, horrifying provocation, I mean, he uses the metaphor of bandits literally sawing off your limbs, you must train your mind to remain free of hatred.
It's a very intense image.
It really is. You train your mind to remain filled with compassion, which on the surface sounds impossible and maybe even a bit naive. But the underlying logic is so empowering, it proves that our internal state is completely independent of the external world. No matter what someone does to you externally, they cannot force you to carry hatred internally unless you give them permission.
That is the ultimate fearlessness. It's the profound realization that the grudge you hold only weighs down your own raft. The person who harmed you isn't carrying those rocks, you are.
We've covered some incredibly deep waters today, from the difference between guilt and remorse, to memory reconsolidation, to the ancient wisdom of dropping our heaviest cargo. And I want to make sure you, the listener, know exactly where to find more of this.
Because there's so much more to explore.
Absolutely. Everything we discussed today comes directly from the RAFT to Freedom Workbook. It's written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen, and they are making the entire 66-chapter program completely free and available online.
Which is just incredible generosity on their part.
Truly. You can dive into all of it at rafttofreedom.org.
It's a remarkable resource. And as we close this deep dive, I want to leave you with a specific self-reflection drawn directly from the end of chapter 65. Something to really ponder as you navigate your own waters.
Let's hear it.
Ask yourself, if I was reaching the end of my life, which resentment or regret would weigh most heavily on my heart? And what would it take to begin laying it down now?
That's a heavy question, but a necessary one. You know, we spend so much time focusing on the weight of the rocks in our cargo hold, but consider this. You probably didn't put most of those rocks there yourself. Many of our resentments and unskillful habits were actually handed down to us across generations.
Generational trauma is very real.
Exactly. So when you finally do the hard work of dropping them overboard, you aren't just lightening your own raft. You are breaking a historical chain. You are making sure that the next generation's ship sets sail with a completely empty cargo hold.
That is a beautiful way to look at it.
Thank you. And I'll leave you with this final thought from Oprah Winfrey to echo in your mind. She said, "Without forgiveness, the grudge you're holding is actually holding you." Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.